Let's talk about quickly the last Board of Regents meeting. We were actually recording our interview the week of that meeting, so we didn't get talk about some of the important issues that came up, including changing the scope of the Paducah campus to increase up to $200,000. My first question about this is, because this is a bonded project, can you increase the value of the bond, or does this money have to come from Murray State University?
As most listeners probably are aware, we're building a new campus facility at property we acquired in Paducah. Actually, it's referred to as the Barclay Woods property on Interstate 24, right across from West Kentucky Community and Technical College. Now, with that, we had been, of course, in the process of coming up with building design based upon a financing deal that had been put together among City of Paducah, McCracken County, Paducah Economic Development Incorporated, as well as the university, where everybody's contributing into the pot, if you will, to pay for bond principal and interest to get this building constructed. It was going to be a $10 million deal. In fact, the financing agreement had provided $10 million, which in essence would become the budget for the facility. Well, as the board had desired to look at some design renderings, some sketches of elevations and that type of thing on the facility, they had certain design elements that they wanted to see included. Now, the charge that had been given to myself, our chief facilities officer, Kim Oatman, and others here at the university, at the time this financing agreement had been entered into, that charge was get this building done for the amount you have available, $10 million. That's what you have to work with. You have to bring it in at that cost. If you get a donor or someone to pick up some additional furnishings, that's great. But the message was clear when we reached the agreement with those other governmental entities and executed that here at the university with our board, get this done for the $10 million you have. Don't come back asking us for more. On that basis, we had done designs. As those were shared with the board, they really seemed to want some more, I think, in terms of styling, maybe a little bit of a wow factor. And on that basis, on April 27th, at a special meeting that was called, not just for that purpose, but also to set tuition and some other things, decided to authorize another $200,000 as the total amount for the project to allow the architects to go back in and look at some of these more refined design elements that would add some punch, maybe provide a bit more traditional campus styling to that facility up in Paducah. So with that and the board's action on April 27th, we've now gone back to the architects, asked them to do some things looking at roof lines, looking at some sort of cupola or clock tower element that still would fit in under that new $10.2 million price tag and see what we can come up with. So the architects are doing that now. And by the time we come to the groundbreaking on that facility, which is scheduled for May 31, in fact, all listeners are invited to come up that day, we will have a design that's out there that incorporates these issues that the board wanted to see in the building, but still comes in for $10.2 million, given that additional $200,000 authorization.
Now, this is bonded between McCracken County, the City of Paducah, and Murray State University.
Well, that's right. McCracken County holds the bond, all mm-hmm. right? Some entity had to go ahead and issue the bond, and that was determined to be McCracken County. But all of us then are contributing funding for purposes of payment for McCracken County to make those payments. Yes, they're taking a share, but the City of Paducah is contributing. We're contributing, but it's really McCracken County holding that bond. We're all helping to pay for it. Now, one thing that has to happen, given this increased authorization on the part of the board from a couple of weeks ago, is that we will have to go to Frankfort, likely appear in front of Capital Projects Bond Oversight Committee, and indicate to them and get their okay for increasing the scope by $200,000, indicate what purpose it's for, and that type of thing. It's also the fact that, as you alluded to or implied in the question, the bond doesn't increase. The bond is for $10 million, and we have another $200,000 potentially. Now, we don't know until the final specs get put together for this building, and we send it out for bids and see what somebody tells us it's going to cost. But, you know, when the specifications book is done, we're going to have a pretty good idea what we're looking at here. That additional $200,000 is going to have to come from some source. And the way the project was reauthorized in the 2012-14 Commonwealth budget, that can't be state funds. We'll probably have to go out and have that as a gift of some sort to provide the additional monies that the board said they wanted to spend for the building, because we can't just go in and take any funds for any purpose, given the state's authorization of us to do this work. So we're going to have to kind of navigate a fine path here to get it accomplished. But in the end, all of this will, you know, take place, and we'll end up with a very nice building for up to $10.2 million.
The current facility in Paducah is called the CRISP Center.
Right.
Will the new facility retain that name?
Well, we haven't put this in front of the board yet, and it's a bit of an uncertainty. We actually have a board policy that's been pretty longstanding with regard to the naming of facilities at the university. And that policy states that if a building is coming on to replace another named building, and that previous or old building ceases to exist, the name travels with the building. Now, what we anticipate is that we're going to be getting rid of the current CRISP Center in the southeast side of Paducah, the old soda bottling plant, that we will look to put that up for sale or have some sort of transfer of deed to that facility. So if that happens and it's no longer within our building inventory and this new center in Barclay Woods has taken over that function, under our policy, it could continue with the name CRISP attached to it. If it would be the case, though, that we keep that old center for whatever reason and make some sort of university use of it and retain the name with that, then I think it opens up the naming. So whatever we do here is going to be somewhat pivotal around what happens to the old CRISP Center, and would have to, you know, be reviewed by our board ultimately for whatever naming takes place.
Also, during the April 27th meeting, you did set tuition rates. You went to the board with the administration's proposal of a 3% increase
right.
in tuition, which would have been below the cap set by the Council on Post-Secondary Education.
Uh-huh.
The Board of Regents decided to up that tuition increase to 4%, which adds a bit more money to the students attending the university. What does this mean, though, to the university budget? How much does this mean for the general fund?
Well, you're right. I had come in with a 3% recommendation. Now, the state, through the Council on Post-Secondary Education, was going to allow up to a 5% for the regional or comprehensive institutions in Kentucky. We looked at that, and given a longstanding tradition, and this board particularly saying repeatedly that a very, very strong value for them was keeping pricing as low as we could while maintaining the quality that we've come to be known for. Given those interests that had been very clearly expressed, we looked that we could get through next year with a 3% increase. Now, that was not going to allow much latitude to do anything else in terms of growth, in terms of raises. I mean, it would have kept everything going fairly status quo for one more year, pending a pretty close budgetary and planning review that we have in the works for 2012-13. So we'd gone forward with that 3%. The board in their discussions ultimately determined, since they had some room in what the CPE had set for its limit or its cap, to go ahead and add one more percentage on there. And as they talked about it at the time, it was really, you know, not something I would disagree with, certainly. What was expressed by the board was the fact that we don't know where things will be going in the future with state support, with appropriations. And maybe if we've got a little room yet to wiggle here, we should take some advantage of it. and use that for the future, you know, future growth of the institution, which again, there's nothing to argue with in that. But we knew that this would probably be a year for a very small, very slight increase in tuition, because initially we thought we might be having a library fee added on. And we'd been really working for some time, 18 months or so, gearing toward a very, very small percentage increase in tuition because we assumed we'd be adding on a library fee. When the board decided not to go that direction, I felt that since we'd put the plans in place to get by on a pretty low increase, to go ahead and stick with those plans. I didn't feel that I should, you know, start lartering up with a whole bunch of things because we weren't going to now do a library fee. We were planning on trying to be in the 2-3% range for next year. Now we're not going to have a library fee on there for students, but I didn't think that augured just to go back and start adding, you know, adding on money, and stuck with the 3%. The board said, let's go one more percent for future purposes as we look to try to maybe build some reserves a bit, not knowing what the future of appropriations will be after the next 2 years, which, again, there's no way you can argue with that.
And is your budget complete now before the board meeting next week?
Well, as we sit here and tape today, it's not. Now, we're about 6 days from sending our budget off to the printer. You probably would not be surprised to know that the full budget book for the university runs well over 600 pages. Typically one account per page, or if it's a large function that we're being funded, you know, it's going to run more pages than that. But it's a huge document, and we continue to work and tweak as we go through these last days before sending it off to be printed. But we'll come in with a budget, given this tuition increase at 4%, and really trying to hold the line on expenses next year to the extent we can, again, without giving up quality, without changing the face of the university. We think we're going to be at a position where we have a budget we can deliver for about a $1.5 million deficit. That's probably not bad given the environment we're in, and we have more than sufficient operating reserves we've been saving back for a number of years to cover that. As I mentioned earlier, we'll be doing a pretty full-scale planning and budget review if the board moves forward with that during 12-13. So that we come back then a year from now with a plan to go back to balanced budgets.
We'll be back with Murray State President Dr. Randy Dunn in a moment. We're back with Murray State President Dr. Randy Dunn. We meet monthly. We talk about higher education issues and things affecting Murray State. You can hear the entire conversation online at WKMS.org. Murray State's recently hired a new College of Education dean, which also leads me to ask about the direction of the College of Education. Is there going to be maybe a different orientation that will coincide with your passion for K-12 education?
Well, yeah, Chad, you raise something that's always a pleasure for me to talk about, and that's K-12 education generally and our role here at the university in forwarding that for the region and the Commonwealth. And I am excited that we are going to have a new College of Education dean, Dr. David Whaley, coming to us and starting July 1. David's actually made a couple of trips here, gotten involved in some college activities, held some meetings. We really do feel committed that we have an outstanding college here, populated by a number of very talented faculty and staff. We train teachers for the far western 18 counties of Kentucky at the level of about 70-80%, in some counties over 80% of the teachers who are trained by Murray State University. So all of that being said, we think we have just a wonderful entity in the College of Education on campus, and obviously looked for a leader to match that level of status and what we know can happen from the college. Dr. Whaley came to the fore during that process, and he's going to make a great dean for us in education. He comes from Iowa State. One of the things I think is attractive, that he's had some experience at somewhat larger schools, looks at different approaches, has maybe a little broader repertoire of doing things to support K-12 education. Obviously has great grounding as a practitioner in the field, and not unlike me, kind of came up through the ranks, if you will, and has, you know, clearly one foot strongly planted in the world of K-12 schools while the other one is here in higher education. But more to the point of your question about how I see the college kind of coming along with the vision I have for K-12. You know that this past year we started, and again, kind of slowly and methodically, a new initiative we're calling K-12 Connect. And it's really looking in some ways to parallel what we're doing with regional outreach, taking the resources and the capacity of the university to support projects and programs that emerge within the region where we have some value to add, not taking over the projects or going in like the big dog, but looking to contribute to success that we want to have happening within all the schools of our region. We're not doing a lot with that loudly. We want to get some firm supports under K-12 Connect this year as we go into next year, but that is going to be the bridge, I see it, between what the college is doing in preparing, well-trained teachers and administrators for Kentucky and having the university to have a real impact in improving schools, in helping what's happening there in tangible ways that actually opens up more opportunities for the students coming through them, makes them more college ready, and we hope gets them more convinced to come to Murray State University. David gets that set of connections from what the college does in the preparation role, how the university's taken on this regional support responsibility, how K-12 Connect can bridge those things, and the fact that you've got to be involved in the schools for any and all of that to work. And he understands that pipeline, if you will, and we'll dive in and be very successful with it. Now, it's not to say we haven't done anything with K-12 Connect this year. I actually had announced this initiative last October at the State of the University address and didn't really have money for staffing or to build any kind of office with it per se. But we're looking at what we can do to support efforts from our local schools, with our local schools, to build their capacity. So now through the College of Business, Bowen Fine College of Business is housing a regional junior achievement program that's actually reactivated JA within schools in these far west counties. We're looking at a teacher academy as part of the Four Rivers Scholarship Program that we've entered into with our River County High Schools. We're getting ready to do a college readiness summit this June through the College of Education. We're looking at an early childhood training program that we maybe could kick off this fall, working with educational leaders up in Henderson. So it's not that we've sat just twiddling our thumbs with K-12 Connect, but until we get a new dean in, we figure out a way to maybe give a few resources to this K-12 Connect program. We're starting fairly slowly, somewhat quietly, but you're going to see heightened attention to this as we go on.
Had we not been doing this over the last 10 years?
We had. We absolutely had in a variety of ways, but there's really not been any coordination to it. There's been no attempt to kind of strap together the engines of the university for this purpose. You might have one faculty member that has interest in doing something and goes out to a school and works as a consultant. You might have a grant in some other area that allows students to come in for an experience on campus. Regional outreach is an example. Regional outreach has done funding that's helped all kinds of things, brought in Hooked on Science, the science guy, transported elementary students here to the university for Shakespeare. So it's not that nothing's been going on, it has, but I do think there's a way that, kind of going back to this pipeline approach, we can get kind of a comprehensive nature and a coordinated approach wrapped around all of this and be more strategic in what we do, where we do it, how we do it, without duplicating programs, without having one person do the same thing 10 times over in different places. It's just getting a coordination wrapped around a number of efforts that are just kind of out there ongoing. And it also allows for the total to be greater than the sum of its parts as we see connections that can be made between programs and that type of thing.
Well, Murray State's women's softball team had a pretty good season. They almost won the OVC tournament championship.
They did. They had a third place finish in the championship. I think, ended with about a 34-22 record. So given it being their third year, I think they did well.
We learned this week that Coach Jay Pyron won't be back with the team in the fall. Just wondering the story there and how Alan Ward is moving forward, the athletic director.
Well, I don't know that there's really any story there per se, but I would say generally that our athletic director, Alan Ward, is very conscientious in every sport that we sponsor here at the university, in going through and doing a pretty reasoned analysis and review of the season at the completion of every season, look at, you know, where we've come, where we should be going, and on that basis make some determination about staffing for each sport and resources and needs as it goes forward. I think it was one of those situations where, as an AD, you look very carefully and try to think about the positives and the areas for improvement and get a comparison there to make a determination about where you go for the future. And it's not that we've had a bad season. Jay certainly has contributed wonderfully to this success we've been able to achieve in three seasons. He was able to get this new Division I sport out of the gate for us and well established within the Ohio Valley Conference as well as regionally. We're very grateful to him for that. But I think as Alan underwent this process that he does with every sport every year, it was a thinking that we have the ability to probably make a pretty good jump, to make a pretty good leap on a number of bases, the facilities, the players, the way the program's been accepted within the region. And as he considered all of these factors, made the determination, which I support, that it may take a different head coach to tie all of these factors together and push us to that next level.
Former Murray State student David Wilson had confessed to having bomb-making materials in his residential college room. This is a few months back, and we've reported on it a couple of times. He was dismissed from the university. This week, we've reported that he may be able to re-enroll, granted, on a probationary status, and he won't be able to visit or live in the residential college system. How did MSU come to this decision?
Well, this was handled through our judicial board. Obviously, there was a criminal case that had to make its way through the system on this young man, had to be adjudicated, resolved, and over the past few months, that had taken place. And for those locally who follow the local papers and press, you know, you've been able to see how this in fact played out. But at the end, there was a plea bargain that was entered into, and this young man is able then to come back as you know, as an individual who has paid his due, so to speak, and continue on with his life, given the way this came down with the agreement. So on that basis, he sought to be reinstated to the university. We have a process for that. It's through our judicial board at the university. That's a board, Chad, as you know, that's made up of a variety of individuals. There's faculty representation on that board, student representation. They have the ability to conduct hearings, weigh evidence, and make a determination on these types of outcomes in the case of Mr. Wilson, whether or not he should be reinstated, given this entire arc of activity, court case, and everything else that played out over the past few months. In meeting, the J board determined, as you've indicated in your question, that he could re-enroll if he so chose, but there were a number of limitations on that. As you've pointed out, he's not going to be living within the residential college system. He is on a probationary status if he chooses to come back. He's not going to be allowed in certain locations, etc. And the J board is in place, as it is at every university, for these types of cases for this reason. I think they were very careful and thoughtful in their approach to this case. They rendered their decision, and it's certainly not something that, you know, I think is so onerous that I would go in and try to interrupt or change. The judicial board has powers, duties, and an authority granted to it by the Board of Regents. They exercised it appropriately, rendered a decision, and now we're going to go forward. It's unclear yet as to whether the gentleman's going to re-enroll. At the time the J Board ruled, he wasn't sure whether he will come back, but he will be provided the opportunity with the strictures that the J Board put in place if he so chooses.
Well, Dr. Dumm, we're out of time this week.
Thanks again, Chad.